All right, we'll be looking at 1 Corinthians class number 36 this morning, Paul's refusal. We'll see what he refuses in the context, by way of introduction anyway. You know, we just finished studying Paul's arguments for his right to the Corinthian support, and we said that after verse 6 of chapter 9, you could almost say that Paul was done, because he made an absolutely airtight case that people working for the gospel should be paid for it. But now we're going to study Paul arguing just as strongly for his right to give up being paid. And that will be in verses 15 through 18. Let's read those verses now. In 1 Corinthians 9:15, it says, "But I have used none of these things, and I am not writing these things so that it will be done so in my case. For it would be better for me to die than to have any man make my boast an empty one. For if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of. For I am under compulsion. For woe is me if I do not preach the gospel. For if I do this voluntarily, I have a reward. But if against my will, I have a stewardship entrusted to me. What then is my reward? That when I preach the gospel, I may offer the gospel without charge, so as not to make full use of my right in the gospel." So now Paul's going to refuse payment for his work. Actually, this has been his point from the beginning of chapter 9. He was just proving that he deserved it up to now. And now Paul's going to proceed to argue that he also has the right to give it up. So he will explain now why he had deliberately not accepted their patronage or their support. Now, first we have to notice, and you might ask yourselves, well, does that mean then that all pastors shouldn't be paid? Well, Paul did not apply this principle across the board. Look at Philippians. In Philippians 4 and 15, verse 15. In Philippians 4, 15, Paul says, "You yourselves also know, Philippians, that at the first preaching of the gospel, after I left Macedonia, no church shared with me in the matter of in giving and receiving, but you alone." So he didn't apply that principle to all the churches. He received financial support from Macedonia and from the Philippians. But from the Corinthians, he refused to take financial support. So if we go back then to 1 Corinthians 9, we're going to see that the decision to accept support or not is a matter of judgment. And it's relevant to different situations. One situation might not require the giving up of that support, another situation might. Now, Paul, in verse 12, used the example of the other apostles. And in 9:12, remember we had this last time, it says, "If others share the right over you, do we not more? Nevertheless, we did not use this right, but we endure all things so that we will cause no hindrance to the gospel of Christ." So he's using the principle that we studied of hindrance. We are not to use our Christian liberties if they become a hindrance to the gospel. Now, he uses the word share He says, if others share the right over you, share is the word meteko. And meteko is a third person plural verb. So the plural indicates that the majority of Christian workers were being paid for their work. And this was his right as well. And Paul did not say that paying a worker in the gospel is wrong. He never says that. In fact, he is adamant that it is right. And we studied that in the first part of chapter 9. Paul says it is written in the Old Testament and the New that the worker is worthy of his wages. So Christian workers should be able to be paid by their local body. So the principle goes like this. The proper application of refusal to exercise a right or liberty never forces itself on others. Remember last week I was telling you about that guy that went to a church that made their pastor work because Paul did. And that's totally unbiblical. Absolutely unbiblical. It doesn't force itself on others. So we are never to tell another Christian to set aside a liberty in any given situation. The other thing to remember is that Paul's refusal to not use his liberty does not diminish the liberty itself or the right itself. In verses 13 and 14, we didn't finish this up quite last time. 13 and 14 is what we call the analogical argument that Paul makes. Analogical just means it's an analogy. He uses analogy. In verse 13, he says, do you not know that those who perform sacred services eat the food of the temple, and those who attend regularly to the altar have their share from the altar? So the right to compensation for spiritual service goes all the way back to the Old Testament. Flip back to Leviticus 7 for a second. And in Leviticus chapter 7, verse 5, it's talking about the offerings. And in verse 5, it says, the priest shall offer them up in smoke on the altar as an offering by fire to the Lord. It is a guilt offering. Every male among the priests may eat of it. It shall be eaten in a holy place. It is most holy. Now, at verse 8, it also says, also the priest who represents any man's burnt offering, that priest shall have for himself the skin of the burnt offering which he has presented. Likewise, every grain offering that is baked in the oven and everything prepared in a pan or on a griddle shall belong to the priest who presents it. Every grain offering mixed with oil or dry shall belong to the sons of Aaron. Remember, Aaron was the beginning of the priestly line. In the Old Testament, Paul has proved that payment for working in the temple or offerings has a right to be paid for doing that. He has a right to compensation. Now, one could argue here that his example was from the Old Testament and that it's no longer valid. But in chapter 9, verse 14, Paul brings it up to the New Testament when he says, so also the Lord directed those who proclaim the gospel to get their living from the gospel. It is still a principle in the New Testament that work should be paid for, or work demands payment or a salary. In verse 14, he says, so the Lord directed those, and that word directed is the word diatasso, and diatasso is a very strong word for a command. It means to put into a proper order or relationship, according to Bauer, Arndt, and Gingrich. Look at Luke 10. And in Luke 10, starting with verse 7, it says, stay in that, and he's talking about the 70 that he sent out back at verse 1. It says, now after this, the Lord appointed 70 others and sent them in pairs ahead of him to every city and place where he himself was going to come, so that they were going to work on preparing places for Jesus. Verse 7, it says, if a man of peace is there, your peace will rest on him. But if not, it will return to you. Stay in that house, eating and drinking what they give you. For the laborer is worthy of his wages. Do not keep moving from house to house. Whatever city you enter, and they receive you, eat what is set before you. So they are to accept pay from the ones that they are ministering to. So Paul's argument in 1 Corinthians 9 do apply to the church age. Back to 1 Corinthians 9 now, starting a new subsection here, and that is the wise use of liberty. And that's 1 Corinthians 9, 15 through 18. And in verse 15, it says, but I have used none of these things, and I am not writing these things so that it will be done so in my case. For it would be better for me to die than have any man make my boast an empty one. So, Paul has spent the first part of this chapter proving that he has the right to be paid for his work in Corinth. And he's proved it again and again, and his argument is tight. You can't disprove it. But now he's going to explain why he refuses to take anything from them. So Paul explains it, and he will explain why he had deliberately refused to take anything from them. He did not want his readers to interpret what he said on this subject as a veiled request for support. And you can see where a reader would get that idea. Oh, he's just saying that so they will send him money. But he didn't want. He says, I am not writing these things so that it will be done so in my case. He had made his decision to support himself while he preached freely. The Lord did not require this from Paul. It wasn't a requirement. He did it on his own volition. And we'll see that because we're going to look at verse 15 now. And verse 15 is what Robertson called quite tangled in the Greek text. And this really is. Robertson and Bullinger both say this reflects the intensity of Paul's feeling on the subject. And he uses a figure of speech, and that figure of speech denotes intensity of feeling. Paul's being very, very emotional here, even though you can't get that from the English as much as the Greek. But remember, I think I mentioned it before, as we study the Bible and we're going through these verses, we should note when a tense changes, when the verb tense changes in the middle of a sentence, that kind of is a flag that there's something going on there. Now, this one is really tangled up. First, he repeats his refusal to use his privileges and rights to a salary by use of the perfect middle indicative. Now, if you're looking at your slides, I think it says a present perfect middle indicative. Scratch off the word present. It can't be a present tense and a perfect tense at the same time. He uses a perfect middle indicative. So what he's saying, and remember, perfect tense is something that occurred in the past. It's still in effect. So Paul's saying, I made a decision in the past not to accept money from you. I'm still of that same opinion. And the I in the Greek text, remember, I told you that the verb contains the subject, but Paul writes the subject here. But I have used, and when you see that, when you see the subject written out, it makes it very, very emphatic. So he's saying, I made the decision. I am still of the same opinion. And that's why it's in the middle voice, because he did it himself. I made a decision. I'm still of the same opinion. And I is very emphatic. So what do we have next? The epistolatory aorist tense. So it changed. I am not writing. He explains that he's not hinting for a change on their part for him in this matter. And then he gives his reason in very vigorous language when he says, for better for me to die rather than. So see how intense and emotional this is? I'm sure I can't get it because I'm not an actor or that great of a speaker, but this is very intense. Now he says to die, and to die is an infinitive, for it would be better for me to die. And then, instead of another infinitive, which you would expect to find here, he changes to a future indicative. Now, you don't have to understand all these Greek rules of grammar I'm saying, but I just want to make perfectly clear how intense and personal this verse is. So instead of another infinitive, he uses a future indicative. No one shall make my glorying void, for it would be better for... It goes like this. Here's how that sentence would read sort of in Greek. For it would be better for me to die than no one shall make my boast an empty one. And that's a figure of speech called an anacoluthon, or a non-sequence. It indicates breaking off the sequence of thought. You see how I did that there? He said, for it would be better for me to die than no one shall take away or shall make my boast an empty one. So he completely changes sentences there. Anacoluthon is that's spelled Anacoluthon, and it'll be in the notes I send out. That's defined by Bullinger, and Bullinger is the expert on figures of speech. He wrote the book Figures of Speech Used in the Bible, Explained and Illustrated. And he says that this indicates a breaking off the sequence of thought, and human writings of deep thought or feeling or argument frequently use this figure. So he's talking of deep feeling here. He's very emotional in this verse. So giving up one's liberty has to be done from a deep conviction, something that you're absolutely certain of. Giving up a right or liberty is never to be used for manipulation. And that's sad because most churches today are guilt-driven. And the teacher will say, you need to give up this liberty, and it'll be something like smoking or something that's not in the Bible. And they say, you have to give that up. We don't do that at our church. I've heard that so many times, and it's absolutely ridiculous. One believer has absolutely no right to tell another believer to give up his liberties. Now, in verse 15, he said, for it would be better for me to die than to have any man make my boast an empty one. So the question becomes, what is Paul's boast? Well, most commentators say he's boasting about the fact that he doesn't accept remuneration for what he's done to the Corinthians. He's bragging about that or boasting about it. And I do not think that's what Paul was boasting about. And at least someone agrees with me. That's Grosside. In his commentary, he says the occasion for Paul's boasting is not anything he himself performed, but only the progress of the gospel. And that's what I think Paul boasted about, the progress of the gospel. So Paul is saying he would not allow anyone to make his boasting about the progress of the gospel empty. And empty is the word kanao. And kanao means to cause to be without result or effect. So that implies that it has a purpose. And that purpose is to continue the spread of the gospel and the progress of the gospel. He would rather die first than have the gospel be hindered. And remember when we studied principles of liberty, one of the principles was that if something you're doing that is a liberty or a right hinders the gospel in any way, you should give it up. But that's not anybody's choice but your own. And that's why Paul was being so emphatic in verse 15 when he says, but I have used none of these things. It was his decision, no one else's. And why did he do that? Because he had a compulsion. Verse 16 and 17. Verse 16 says, for if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of, for I am under compulsion. For woe is me if I do not preach the gospel. So Paul has nothing to boast about if he preaches the gospel, either for money or free. He has nothing to boast about for preaching the gospel and not getting paid for it. It's his job to preach the gospel. He is under compulsion to do that. And this is kind of an interesting point I wanted to bring up here, is that you're not required to love your gift. Now, we all have a gift, remember? You're not required to love it, you're required to use it. Paul did love his gift, and I happen to love mine too, but it's not a necessity. And I'll show you why in just a moment here. So even if we don't love our gift, we have to do it. It's our assignment. God has given each one of us an assignment, and it's our job to do it, not to question it, but to do it. And our feelings have nothing to do with it. Now, his job was to preach the gospel, and that's kind of an interesting word. The word preach is the Greek word euangelizo. Euangelizo. We get the word evangelism from it. It means to proclaim the good news. And the word for gospel is euangelion. So they're from the same root word. Euangelion means God's good news to humans. So we might call a preacher a gospelizer. To preach is to gospelize. Of course, there's two words for preach used in the New Testament. One is euangelizo, the other is keruso. And keruso relates to the imperial herald who stood on the street corner and announced the rulings, the law of the emperor. So the preacher has nothing to say on his own. He just teaches what God has said. And if I preach the gospel in this verse, that is 16, for if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of. If I preach the gospel is a third class condition. Third class. What that means, it's the supposable case. In other words, he can preach the gospel voluntarily, or he can preach the gospel against his will. But the supposition is that he will do it voluntarily. That's kind of what the third class condition means there. And the phrase, woe is me, explains the compulsion. It says, for if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of. For I am under compulsion. For woe is me if I do not preach the gospel. So Paul, in his own mind, had to heed the call of Christ. And his call from Christ was rather spectacular, if you read the Damascus Road incident. And he had a real call to the ministry. And he has a choice in the matter. He can preach voluntarily and receive a reward, or he can preach against his will because he has a stewardship. That's verse 17. He says, for if I do this voluntarily, I have a reward. But if against my will, I have a stewardship entrusted to me. In the Roman Empire, a steward was the slave who managed a household. So a steward was a slave, and he was a slave that managed a household. His job was to keep the house in order. But since he was a slave, he had no choice in the matter. He had to do it. He could do it willingly, voluntarily, or he could do it against his will. But either way, he has to do it. So either way, Paul preaches the gospel. But he loved the gospel, as you know, if you've read much of Paul's writing. But he does not have the choice to preach the gospel or to not preach the gospel. He has a choice whether to do it voluntarily and get a reward or against his will, and it's his job. He's got to do it. Some people hate their jobs. Some people love their jobs. That's just the way life is. And Paul loved his job, and I happen to love mine. So each and every believer has a spiritual gift. We've been over this before. And each and every believer is a slave of Christ. Therefore, each and every believer has a responsibility to exercise that gift. Now, if you don't know what your gift is, my advice is try some of them. See what happens. You can read the gifts and try some of them. And if it's successful, then keep at it. But you only have to exercise your gift under two conditions. First, if you want to do it, and second, if you don't want to do it. Those are the only two conditions to exercising your gift. Now, Paul's reward is in verse 18, where it says, "What then is my reward? That when I preach the gospel, I may offer the gospel without charge, so as not to make full use of my right in the gospel." So his reward is the pleasure of setting aside his liberty, his right, and to preach the gospel free of charge. Paul actually finds pleasure in setting aside his liberty in the interest of the growth of the gospel or the spread of the gospel. And that's a very noble reason, or a very noble thing to find pleasure in, I would have to say. Now, that's our little subsection that we had today, and I'm going to stop there so you can get to your Easter activities. And we'll pick up then with verse 19. Okay, Father, thank you for your word, which is living and powerful. And thank you for the Apostle Paul and his love for the gospel. He loved the gospel so much that he set aside his liberties, his rights as an apostle, to be reimbursed for the work that he did down in Corinth. And we see in 2 Corinthians, he says, "I had to rob other churches so I could teach to you." So he was provided for by other churches, but he set aside his liberty in Corinth in the interest of preaching the gospel. And may we be followers of Paul and his great love for the gospel. In Christ's name, amen.